Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Time for the Friday edition of Hancock and Kelly.
You two belong together.
John Hancock, Michael Kelly. Sponsored by Insperity. HR that makes a difference. On News Radio 1120, KMOX.
Well, on the list of things you don't see every day,
you're a jerk.
Michael Kelly is in St. Louis.
How are you?
I'm good, and it's good to see you.
Yeah, I've been gone since Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I know you have. You're going to be dipping in and out of the show today because you are on the show today.
The show, the aptly named The Show, yeah, with Amy Marks, of course. You were supposed to have somebody else with you, but they wound up coming down with the flu.
Everybody's got the flu.
Everybody's got the flu.
Except for me and you.
But last night, yeah, by the way, the two healthiest people in St. Louis.
Very
neither
healthy.
Of us have had COVID.
That's right.
Neither of us, we rarely get sick.
Very rarely.
We're troopers.
I'm like a machine.
So last night, I didn't realize this. Uh-huh. Last night, I'm on the airplane.
Yeah.
And I got a text from you.
Yeah.
Or actually from your wife.
Ooh.
And your wife was at the place that you and I play snooker.
The Pink Galleon.
The Pink Galleon.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there thinking the whole time, I'm like, what is this all about?
Yeah.
And then I realize, oh my gosh, it was your anniversary last night.
It was our anniversary.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you.
What a romantic
years.
Guy you are, taking your wife to the snooker hall.
Well, no, we went out to dinner. We went to Palmano's.
Hey now.
It was
best
very
restaurant
nice.
In town.
Yeah. And, 32 years. And I said to Georgianne, I said, you know, sweetheart, I've given you the best years of my life. And she said, which two were they? And I want to say probably somewhere around 04 and 02 were pretty good. But yeah, 32 years.
Yeah. Wow, that's incredible.
It was
what
a
special
December,
occasion.
It was a December evening in 1990, just 2 days before Ivan Browning said we were going to have the biggest earthquake in history in the New Madrid Fault. And so we got married and got out of town.
If I remember correctly, there was an earthquake the night of your wedding. You wound up getting sick.
Yeah, yeah. So we go to the reception, and I married the only daughter of Greek parents. It was a big wedding. And so we're there at the reception venue, very swanky. The band's playing, lovely. And I hadn't eaten all day, and so, you know, you have the toast, and my brother gives a toast, and they serve the chicken.
Hey, now.
A little chicken cordon bleu.
Yeah, right.
Got the little
French food for the Greeks.
Stuff, you know, the little cheese running through it there on the chicken. It was a lovely plate, lovely presentation. And I was eating that chicken like there's no tomorrow because I hadn't eaten all day. I was nervous. I got getting married. And I'm eating the chicken there, and the evening progresses, and you have the first dance, and you have the groom mother dance, and then you cut the cake, and you all of those things you do at a wedding, and then you toss the garter, and then the Greek dancing, and everybody gets out, and we got the napkins out there, and everybody grabs a napkin, and you're in a circle, you're doing the Greek, opa, we say everything's wonderful. The Greek pastries come out. We're having the baklava, the galatoboudico, Michael.
Oh, listen to you.
Hancock
talking Greek is like
Koulimbiades. The
Koulimbiades.
It was phenomenal. And so the evening finally winds down.
Yeah, yeah.
We go out in downtown St. Louis, and we get on a lovely horse-drawn carriage, and we clip-clop our way through the streets of St. Louis on our first night as husband and wife, and wonderful, romantic. It was tremendous. Little nip in the air, blanket on our laps.
Right.
We get up to the honeymoon suite.
Hey now, here we go.
And we open up some count some checks.
Uh-huh.
You know, there was real money in those envelopes. Georgianne goes into the bathroom.
Uh-huh.
She comes out, one of the most gorgeous things I've ever seen.
Right.
I grab her behind her head, I kiss her, and I say, you know, I think I'm going to throw up. I had food poisoning from the
John.
For the next 4 hours, I was in and out of the bathroom until I was completely dehydrated, ended up at Barnes Hospital, and that's how. So last night was a definite improvement over that.
Well, who would have thought? 32 years after that kind of a start, well done, my friend.
Thank
Congratulations
you.
To Georgianne. You are a saint.
And welcome back to Hancock and Kelly. John Hancock here with you. James O'Sullivan skillfully working the board to my left. And we are now joined on the Quiver River guest line by one of my favorite CBS News analysts, Leonard Steinhorn. He's the political analyst at CBS, a guy who's got a breadth of knowledge that is truly impressive. And I'm so glad he's taken some time to join us today. Leonard, welcome to KMOX again.
Hey. Always happy to be here. Thank you.
So Congress, the Senate last night, they passed some legislation to avert a rail strike that could have been economically crippling for this country as we head into the holiday season. And they did it in a bipartisan fashion. Any surprise there?
Well, no real surprise there. I think there was also an effort to add an amendment to include 7 sick days into this legislation that actually got a couple of very conservative Republican votes, but not enough Republicans to be able to get to that 60-vote threshold. So the law went through without those sick days, and it basically gives the railroad workers a lot of what they wanted. And in fact, a couple of those railroad unions supported this, but a number of them didn't. So those unions are dissatisfied. But the bottom line is, you couldn't shut down our economy. This is one of those situations where if you have a rail strike like that, that will basically sink us, set us behind, stop our supply chain within our country, and cause all sorts of economic chaos and potentially unemployment beyond what the railroad workers represent. So I think this is a move that President Biden, though a pro-union president, had to do, and he had to work with the Democrats in Congress to get this through. It didn't make them fully comfortable that they had to step in, especially overriding what a few of those unions wanted. But for the sake of the economy and for workers in general, this is something they felt they had to do.
And they got it done, and they got it done in a bipartisan fashion. You know, the inflation would have been impacted as well if you disrupt the supply chain, because that's going to increase the price as demand continues. So job well done. We're now in the lame duck period for this Congress. This Congress that has a Democrat majority in the House and the 50-50 Senate majority for Democrats with the vice president. What are we expecting to see over the next few weeks in this final stages of this Congress?
Well, certainly we know about the bill where they supported same-sex marriage in the Senate, and that will go on to President Biden's desk at a certain point once it's all completed the legislative process. So that's a big deal, because a lot of Americans were very worried by an opinion by Clarence Thomas on the Dobbs decision, the abortion decision, suggesting that such other rights as same-sex marriage might go away as well. So I think people acted in that way, and you got maybe about a quarter of Republicans in the Senate who were willing to sign on to that too. So that's going through. But even bigger and potentially more immediate is the notion of a potential government shutdown if we can't fund the government. So the Democrats are going to have to be able to do that. B, there's concern about the debt limit, bumping up against the debt limit. And there are a lot of people in the Democratic caucus who want to address that, because they're not so sure that the Republicans who would control the House come 2023 will be quite so cooperative. And you don't want to bring our economy to the precipice on that one, because that could have reverberations not only in the U.S., but around the world, and cause all sorts of problems, if we don't increase the debt limit. And what that means is not necessarily that they're borrowing new money, they're just increasing the debt limit for money that has already been borrowed. So that's another thing that they have to deal with, some appropriations bills as well. Right now, you've only got a few weeks between today and the beginning of the new Congress when the Republicans take hold in the House. So there's only so much that the Democrats can do as they control Congress in this final 4 or 5 weeks.
Leonard Steinhorn, CBS News political analyst, is our guest, talking about politics and all that's unfolding. Emmanuel Macron, the president of France, was in Washington, D.C. for a state dinner last night. And it dawned on me, Leonard, that Macron, now that Angela Merkel has gone and they've had all of the disruptions in Great Britain with the prime minister position, Macron has kind of emerged as one of the preeminent leaders in Western Europe, hasn't he?
Yes, absolutely. And in fact, you just took those words out of my mouth, because with all of the sort of chaos in British politics, you don't really have somebody who's been established there. And the new chancellor of Germany is still finding his sea legs. So in effect, it's Macron who has that sort of history, who has that stature, who has the relationships. And this is important to bring him here. I mean, France is one of our major allies. And we angered the French sometime last year on a submarine deal in which we worked with the United Kingdom to be able to supply submarines to Australia, when the French, in fact, thought they had that contract and they felt blindsided. So there was a lot of ill will, and Joe Biden has been steadily repairing that relationship all along. So having Macron here as Biden's first state dinner is an important symbolic move as well as political move, because it gave him a chance to be able to talk about certain things. Now, look, the French and the United States are aligned on Russia and Ukraine. The French and the United States are aligned on issues related to China. But there are some issues that Macron was bringing up to Biden that he really wanted to push Biden on, which is that with that Inflation Reduction Act, it gave sort of tax breaks to ensure that production of electric car, semiconductor, and green technology parts are produced in the United States. And the French and our allies and some people in other parts of the world, like South Korea, are very concerned, saying, hey, this could hurt us. This is sort of the America first stuff that we heard under Donald Trump, and we're very concerned about it. So you had to imagine that there are some very candid conversations between Joe Biden and Macron about that, because Macron, representing the Europeans, says this puts our industries at a disadvantage, especially at a time when we are trying to transition to a more sustainable form of energy to be able to power our continent.
We are visiting with Leonard Steinhorn, political analyst for CBS. In just a few minutes left here, Leonard. Turning to the domestic front, you know, we have this peculiar system where we nominate presidents. It starts with a caucus in Iowa and then a primary election in New Hampshire, two states that are not particularly representative of the country, and to many, they have a disproportionate influence on who becomes the presidential nominees of both parties. Joe Biden has indicated that he wants to move away from that model, and it's meeting with some resistance. This is a pretty interesting subject, and the decision's going to have to be made relatively soon, right?
Yes, relatively soon. And basically, what they would do would be replace Iowa, which has had all sorts of problems with its caucusing system, but particularly for the Democratic Party, Iowa's become a pretty strong red state. It doesn't, as you say, reflect the sort of ethnic and religious diversity of the United States. And so the whole point is, if we had so many problems sort of putting that caucus into place and counting votes, if it's not representative, maybe we should shift to states that bring in a more diverse population. So what Biden is proposing is that they move South Carolina to the first state, which had been one of the early states all along. I think it was after Iowa and New Hampshire. Move South Carolina to the first state, and that'll bring in more African-American voices into the Democratic nomination process. And African-Americans are a big part of the Democratic coalition, and more moderate white people who are part of the Democratic coalition in South Carolina. Then after that, okay, acknowledge New Hampshire in its early place, but also go to Nevada out west, which is a very diverse state, particularly with a large Latino population. And then after that, you go to to Georgia, again, a growing potential state for the Democrats with a very diverse population, and Michigan, a strong Midwestern stalwart, which has a diverse population and a large manufacturing component with a lot of working class folks. So their goal is to be able to use these first five primaries to better represent the tableau of American society and have that be the determining factor in who gets the early lead on the nomination fight.
Yeah, that's going to be fascinating to see how that plays out. It dawned on me today because Joe Biden has not indicated definitely that he's going to run for reelection. He may. A lot of people, my partner, my Democratic partner here, thinks that Biden probably won't be the nominee. And you've got, you know, the governor of California out there talking about running. A lot of people are talking about Gretchen Whitmer, the governor of Michigan, as a possible Democratic nominee. And it got me to thinking that at this point in 2006, we had just come out of the midterm elections. It's December of 06. The election was coming up in December, in November of 2008 for president. Nobody knew anything about the first-term senator from Illinois named Barack Obama. He was practically, virtually unknown. Does that kind of figure perhaps exist in either party right now? Somebody out there that nobody's talking about that could emerge as a presidential nominee?
Well, you know, Barack Obama, as we've seen, was a unique political talent, but he was also a good organizer, and he was able to establish this incredible momentum in Iowa and surprise everybody back then. So this is the argument for Iowa, that it's not wholesale politics, but retail politics, where you actually go and meet people and have those conversations and go into the diners and the shop floors and the community centers. You speak with people and they get a measure of you. And I think this is what made Barack Obama such a good candidate. But again, he also hit the national stage in 2004 with that very, very powerful speech at the Democratic convention and clearly generated a lot of buzz right then. And the opponent that he was facing, the front runner, Hillary Clinton, had her weaknesses in the Democratic Party. But you then transfer up to 2020 and you realize what was the state that saved Joe Biden's candidacy, and that was South Carolina. So no surprise that Joe Biden would like to reward the one state that helped his candidacy and allowed him to break out once again, even though he was considered originally a front runner, to break out once again and get the nomination and ultimately win the presidency. So you just never know. You can't game out the system of who's going to surprise people and who won't. But there's some thinking in the Democratic Party that if you go with states like South Carolina, bigger states first, and minimize the smaller states like New Hampshire and Iowa, you have somebody who may not be that sort of dark horse, but may actually appeal to a broad swath of the party, and also have a lot of support within the party already.
Always great stuff from political analyst Leonard Steinhorn. Thanks so much for your insights this morning. I got a bull rider coming up around the corner right here on KMOX.
Time for the Friday edition of Hancock and Kelly.
You two belong together.
John Hancock, Michael Kelly. Sponsored by Insperity. HR that makes a difference. On News Radio 1120, KMOX.
And welcome back. It's John Hancock alongside my partner, Michael Kelly. He's going to be with me. He's dipping in and out this morning because he's going to spend the next 3 hours with Amy Markscores on the show.
Happy Friday, brother.
Happy Friday. It's good to have you back in town.
Celebrating your 32nd wedding anniversary.
I did.
32 years.
It was, they've flown right by.
I think the longest I've been able to commit to anything is about 3 years. and then I've got to make a change.
Well, you do.
But that's what love is, brother. When you spend 32 years with someone, wow.
Yeah.
That's special. Well, and now you're having grandbabies?
We have a grandbaby, and I mean, life just kind of goes, and it seems like yesterday, you know, but it's been 32 wonderful, for the most part, years, and hopefully a lot more to come.
Well, no doubt about it. So I was flying yesterday on the airplane. You know, so many people are getting sick.
Yes.
And so I don't know where you're at on the mask thing. I think you're with me, kind of done with it. It's over with.
Done.
But on the airplane yesterday, and every time I've been flying since about Thanksgiving, I've been wearing a mask.
Have you now?
And the reason why is I don't know who's sitting next to me. Yeah. And, you know, and that is how you're going to catch the flu, or that is how you're going to catch COVID, is being in close contact with somebody. And so I've just chosen to wear my mask. I've noticed that about 20% of the plane wears a mask. And, you know, I don't care what people think of me. You know, the second I get off the airplane, I take it off and I'm in the – because I figure, you know, just like being in a restaurant.
Right.
But being that close, I'm wearing a mask. What, do you think that's crazy?
No, I don't. Full flight yesterday?
Yes. The flights have been full. The airports have just been packed.
Flying into St. Louis was a full flight.
Yeah,
flying into St. Louis. There's something you don't see
every
day. Well, it was,
you know, that's a rare occasion. But there's a lot of connections here.
Yeah, I suppose. Well, yeah, you're on Southwest coming back from sunny Florida. How was sunny Florida?
Man, it was beautiful down there. It's about 80 degrees. The humidity's still there. Man, I'm going to miss it over the next couple of weeks as we're dealing with all this cold weather that's coming here.
Yeah, it's chilly. Going to be very breezy today. Winds up to 45 miles an hour. It might blow over the reindeer in the front yard out there that are
all lit. Yeah, that Georgianne put up.
That she did put up. Yeah.
Did you get your COVID shot yet?
I've gotten three of them, I think.
Have you gotten your flu shot yet?
I have not.
What are you waiting for?
I don't know. You know, my son was home for Thanksgiving and he got the flu.
He did?
Yes. But so far,
it just knocked him out
good.
The whole Thanksgiving?
Yeah, pretty much. It was kind of a bummer.
Megan, who was going to be with you, Megan McBride, who was going to, she, I think, has got it today.
She does.
Little
everybody.
People bring the flu around you. She's got a little one. I think the little one got sick and brought it to her.
Well, that
you can't take it to Tula,
happen.
Buddy.
No. Well, Tula had, in fact, Tula may have gotten Johnny sick. So,
really?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, who knows?
Right.
Who knows? So, had an interesting conversation before the top of the hour with Leonard Steinhorn, the CBS News political analyst, and Joe Biden is making this effort to replace the Iowa caucus as the first in the country presidential event. He prefers to use South Carolina because it's more reflective of the country.
Right.
Certainly then is Iowa. What are your thoughts?
Well, I'm a bit tainted here because I've spent a lot of my life in Iowa, and Iowa, I'm sure, is a lovely state, but I hate it. Yeah. That's the coldest place I've ever been. I've spent too much time there. A lot of the, you know, most of the people who are voting up there, they've met every presidential candidate that's ever run.
Yeah.
Because so much emphasis has been put on Iowa. But when you look around Iowa, John, they look a lot like you and I. There's not much diversity in Iowa. There's not much of an urban community in period, you know, not many big cities in Iowa. And so, you know, I don't know that South Carolina is a fair reflection. It's definitely got the racial breakdown that we have in our country. What I would ultimately like to see us do with these primaries is to put together regional primaries and vote 10 states every 3 weeks to force these candidates to get out in places. Because with Missouri, especially now with the caucus system, nobody's even going to come here and try to court our votes.
Yeah.
And I just think it's so out of whack that we allow Iowa and Arizona and New Hampshire to have such outsized influence. What about you?
Yeah, you know, I'm torn on it because there is something kind of quaint about the retail politics of Iowa, that I think it provides more opportunity for candidates to emerge out of nowhere. You know, I was thinking about, you know, at this stage in 2006.
Barack Obama.
Yeah, I hadn't heard of Barack Obama. I remember I had gotten an email from Jim Talent, who was at the time the U.S. Senator from Missouri, and he said, keep an eye on Senator Barack Obama for president. And I'm thinking, who?
Yeah.
And, I mean, he was right, and Obama was able to get into Iowa and organize. He beat Hillary Clinton there, and the rest, of course, is history. And so there is something appealing about that. Jimmy Carter took the same route to do that back in 1976. And if you go to a larger state or a regional set of primaries, then, you know, that potential for somebody to emerge from nowhere kind of diminishes. So that's my feeling.
Yeah, I there's got to be a better system than having the emphasis on four or five states in this country and an opportunity to kind of get people focused on states outside of the ones that typically have. We got Carol Daniel just hopped in studio.
Hello, hello.
So this is either really great or something bad.
It's really great.
Okay, good.
Shall I?
Yes.
All right. Well, I'm just here to talk about the St. Louis Kaplan Feldman Holocaust Museum.
Oh, yes.
It expanded. They remodeled. It has reopened. And it was the St. Louis Holocaust Museum and Learning Center, but it has quadrupled in size. And the mission remains the same, however, to ensure that the history and lessons of the Holocaust are not forgotten. The goal is that every person who goes to the museum, and you can, you know, go as an individual. You can buy group tickets. You can even buy a membership as well by going to their website, stlholocaustmuseum.org. The desire is that every person who goes to the museum is touched and realizes that they can stand up to hate, bigotry, racism, anti-Semitism, and injustice in your everyday life. There's a permanent museum, and then there will be rotating exhibits as well, a permanent exhibit, I should say, and then rotating exhibits, a speaker's room. It is an incredible place. I've taken the tour. It was enlightening and sobering. Learn more and get your tickets. Take the tour by going to stlholocaustmuseum.org.
Now you got to love that. That's impressive.
It's an amazing place.
Yeah, well, that's got to put that on the bucket list there, Michael.
Yeah, where is it?
It's in St. Louis County.
Yeah, it's at the
map. Go to the website.
I'll check it out.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm going to go.
That sounds very good. Well, we've got an action-packed show coming up for you today. I've got Marcus Mast, a professional bull rider. He's going to be performing at Enterprise Center over the weekend. Scott Kemper, a restaurateur and a good one here in St. Louis, is going to join me and talk about how the restaurant industry has dealt with COVID in the post-COVID world. All of that and more coming up here on The Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Now, back to Hancock and Kelly, sponsored by Insperity, HR that makes a difference, on News Radio 1120, KMOX.
And welcome back to KMOX. John Hancock. This weekend coming up at Enterprise Center is a professional bull riders event at the Show Me State. A lot of bull riders from all across the country are going to be there. It's a great event. Tickets are available for it. It's I guess it's starts tonight.
Starts tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night, yeah, and
6:45.
Sunday.
6:45 Saturday and then 1:45 Sunday.
And joining me in studio is Marcus Mast. He's a professional bull rider out of Indiana. And how long you been doing that?
2012, I got on my first one, so this would be my 10th year.
And how is one practice? How do you become a professional bull rider? I mean, there's got to be a lot of trial and error in there, I would think.
Yeah, there's a couple different ways to practice. I mean, you can either go get on real live bulls to practice on, or you can, what we call a drop barrel. It's a barrel that's kind of like on a teeter-totter. You sit on one end and you have somebody else buck you, or you can get on a stationary barrel, which is just sits in one spot, and you can practice your moves on there. And obviously, different workout stuff that'll help you too.
Yeah, and there's a certain, it's almost like a dancing maneuver, right? You got to flow with the animal, adjust to where they're going, and if you're not in sync, you're going to be down.
Yes, sir, obviously. I mean, you're talking getting on the back of a bull anywhere from 1,400 to 2,000 pounds, and obviously, you know, you're the little guy of it. You're 150, 160 pounds. You can't out-muscle something that's 5 times, 10 times your weight. So, obviously, you know, you got it. The better you can make it like a dance and just flow with them, the better it is for you.
And you've got to stay on that bull for how long?
You got to do it for 8 seconds. And the better you can ride the bull, the harder the bull bucks, the bigger the score.
Yeah. And you've had quite a bit of success in your career, and I guess this is your second time competing in St. Louis. Where do you rank in the world of professional bull riding?
Not too sure where I'm sitting at in the standings right now. I don't try to worry too much about the standings and try to just ride my bulls every time I get the chance to compete here at this level, and hopefully they'll call me to come back next week.
Well, folks, you can see Marcus Mast at Enterprise Center. It starts tomorrow evening at 6 o'clock. 6:45. And then Sunday starts at 1 o'clock down there. How many competitors in St. Louis?
There'll be 35 or 40 of the world's top guys.
Yeah, and if you've not been to one of these events, and I have, it's a great time. Talk about the experience, a first-time fan that will show up this weekend. What are they going to witness?
You're talking about bull riding, so there's either always going to be wild rides or wild wrecks. Hopefully a lot less of the wild wrecks and a lot more of the wild rides.
Yeah, there you go. And so there's a point system. You last the 8 seconds. That's big. And then you're scored for your style as well. Who does the scoring for that?
Yes, sir. So we got, at these deals, we got 4 judges, and then it'll be off of percentage. But each judge gets up to 25 points for the bull and up to 25 points for the rider. So you can have a total of up to 100 points.
So the bulls win too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
the bulls are in a world champion race themselves. So the better they buck, the bigger their score, and they'll be able to earn a big paycheck at the end of the year.
So the bull gets paid. Who knew? That's incredible. So now, what does a bull do with that? I guess somebody owns the bull, right?
Yeah, we got these contractors all over the world that breed these bulls and they exercise them to do this. And they love to play the sport just as much as we do. And at every event, they give a buckle away for bull of the event. And I'm not sure if it pays any for the bull of the event, but the bulls, they can win stuff just as much as we do.
How about that? Who knew? You know, I do politics for a living, so I know a little bit about riding bull, but not about riding actual bulls. So you've got this, I guess, this professional group of bulls. Do you get to know the animals some? I mean, you kind of know what you're dealing with when you get on a particular bull.
Yeah, so a lot of these bulls get hauled from one end of the country to the other. I mean, obviously not always back-to-back weekends, but we get to see a lot of these bulls at this top level. There's only so many bulls that are good enough to come to this level. So we get to see a lot of these bulls week after week after week. And for me, I can remember bulls quite a bit. And there's other guys that got on a bull yesterday, and you'll go ask them, hey, what was that bull like? And they don't even remember what the bull did.
Huh, that's interesting. And this is an international sport,
yes,
right? You have riders from all over the world.
This is all over the world. I mean, there's guys from Brazil. There's guys from Canada. There's guys from Mexico. There's even a few times been a guy from Guatemala.
Wow. And you're a Midwesterner. I would assume that the Midwest probably produces the most American bull riders, or is that not accurate?
Actually, I'm one of the guys. I'm from the state of Indiana, and the state of Michigan, that's bull riders don't come from those states.
Huh. Interesting.
They said the average, I guess, is most of the guys come from west of the Mississippi.
Yeah. Yeah, and Missouri's produced a number of bull riders. There's a lot of cattle operations in this state as well, and I guess that kind of goes hand in hand, right?
Yeah, yeah. And it's, I mean, there's a lot of bull riders that, I mean, even in the lower levels, you know, there's bull riders everywhere.
And you've kind of transitioned your professional rider. I'm talking to Marcus Mast. He's going to be performing at Enterprise Center in the PBR tournament starting tomorrow evening at 6:45. You've kind of evolved into becoming more of a coach now for the sport, and you've really helped a lot of the young people coming along as bull riders.
Yeah, and I mean, that's something I guess that's something that just kind of chose me as growing up. I've always been kind of a leadership guy. I don't know why. I don't look at it any different. I don't look at anybody else any different if I'm in that leadership position. And I just try to act like I'm just one of the other guys. It don't matter if I'm at the top or if I'm at the bottom.
Well, that's a good looking hat you're sporting here in the studio. I like it. How often do you lose your hat once you mount that bull?
I normally, that's one of my worst pet peeves is when my hat flies off during a ride. So I normally put it on to where it won't fly off, but There's still times when it does fly off.
Well, I would think that you get bucked in the wrong way. The hat is probably the least of your concerns, right? You landing and flipping. Have you ever gotten seriously hurt?
Yeah, I mean, it's we're talking sport of bull riding, so there's always a chance of getting hurt. I've crushed my eye socket. I've broken my jaw. I've been very lucky, very blessed with as far as serious injuries. I mean, there's guys that get hurt and they get taken out and they won't be able to ride for the rest of the year, or it could be a career-ending injury.
Right.
But for me, I've been very blessed. I've only had to take a couple weeks off here and there when I'd get hurt. So.
Well, good for you. You're a family man. You got two kids living in Indiana. You're on the tour, the bull riding tour. It's coming right here to Enterprise Center Saturday night, 6:45, Sunday at 1 o'clock. Tickets are available. I guess folks can get tickets where? Ticketmaster. All right. Well, you can get tickets for anything at Ticketmaster, I guess. Marcus Mast, good luck to you. I'll be keeping my eye on your performance. I hope you bring home a winner. For the good old state of Indiana.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. That's Marcus Mast. It's going to be a great time. And when we come back, a buddy of mine, a restaurateur in town, we're going to talk about the restaurant business and how they survived the pandemic and beyond. That's coming your way after the news here on KMOX.
Get ready for Chiefs football Sunday as they take on the Bengals. Pregame at 2, kickoff 3:25.
Touchdown, Kansas City!
Hear the game on 98.7 FM, 1120 AM, and streaming on KMOX.com.
Man, you'd think with all these ads, they could afford to get some better chairs in here, James. I used to have a really nice chair over here in the corner at Studio B at the Voice of St. Louis, and now I'm sitting, I don't know what this thing is. It's not very good. But that's neither here nor there, because on the Quiver River guest line as we speak is a very good friend of mine, Scott Kemper. He's one of the partners in the Llewellyn's family of restaurants here in St. Louis, and just a great guy. He's a fine pool player, too, I might add. And Scott, welcome to KMOX. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, good morning, John. Thanks for having me.
You bet. So, Llewellyn's, you've got how many restaurants? Is it four of them?
So there are three here in St. Louis, Soulard, Webster Groves, and St. Charles on Main Street. And then we have a franchise in Lee's Summit on the west edge of Missouri, kind of over the KC area.
Nice. And so when we first met, and we're in a dinner club together, that's how I got to know Scott Kemper 25 some years ago. I think you were selling cars or something when we very first met.
I was.
How'd you get into the restaurant business?
Well, it's kind of funny. I was working at Saturn, like you said, sales manager there. And a buddy of mine that I went to high school with, who was always in the restaurant business, called a few of us together over a few drinks and said, hey, we got this opportunity to buy Llewellyn's. The guy had retired in the Central West End. And we just need to raise, I think it was like $30,000 or something to take over the spot and get going. So everybody chipped in back then. This is 25 years ago. You know, some people put in a few grand, whatever. Anyway, we had a little team together and we bought it kind of thinking, you know, we were helping him out and this will be fun, but who knows what'll come of it. And then things kind of took off from there. So it's been a wild ride, but 25 years later, here we are.
Yeah, here you are. And Llewellyn's, that Webster Groves location, so iconic in this area. You got the outside dining when the weather's nice, but it's just a great facility, great food. I've enjoyed dining there many times myself. And, you know, a lot of people don't think about when you go into a restaurant, you're seated and the server comes over, you're beginning to have kind of a ballet that begins to take place. Walk us through what happens from placing that order to serving the food. It's really quite remarkable.
It is. A lot of working, you know, moving parts. But, yeah, you come in, you're greeted. Hopefully you don't wait more than a minute or two and you're seated. And then, you know, the staff kind of takes over to make sure you're comfortable, and drink orders are first, and then you kind of, you know, move into maybe appetizers, and then the kitchen kind of comes online and tickets are ringing back there and they're doing your lunch or dinner or what have you. It's kind of amazing how sometimes when you think about it, how you can sit down and, you know, literally if you wanted to, in 30 minutes, you could sit down, have a meal, you know, order, it's cooked and you're out the door. But it's kind of it's how we kind of run things, and it's on time production every day. So we love it.
And, you know, at Llewellyn's, you've got a pretty substantial menu. There's a lot of diversity on that menu and all of that stuff going. I mean, the kitchen has got to be crazy.
Yep, it is. It's a fairly big kitchen. We do a lot of stuff in-house, you know, dressings and homemade, you know, type of items. So, you know, there's folks on the side doing that, and there's folks on the side cooking the actual meal. It can be quite busy, and especially on like a Friday, Saturday night or whatever. It's almost like controlled chaos. It's like everybody's moving in a different direction, but everybody knows their roles, and it works pretty well. So.
Scott Kemper is my guest. He's a proprietor with a group of partners of the Llewellyn's family of restaurants in St. Louis and Kansas City. You said you've been doing this for 25 years, and something that I would imagine when you got into this business you never contemplated was a worldwide pandemic. And, you know, a lot of restaurants didn't survive that pandemic. You guys did. How tough was that?
Well, it was really tough because there's no rule book. You know, out of nowhere, they said, hey, we're closing everything down, you know, and you can't prepare for that. And immediately you're like, what do we tell our staff? We don't want to lose our staff. How are we going to get through it? How are we going to pay our bills? So the initial shock was like, oh, man, this could be the end, you know. But, you know, we had an amazing core group that said, hey, man, we're going to stick with you and we're going to try to get through this. Let's see what happens. And, you know, they did. And we, you know, did the best we could that first month or two. And then it, you know, kind of slowly started to, you know, people kind of got back out and to-go business started picking up. And it was a very slow go, but we kind of just tried to run it shoestring and the best we could. And I think that's the best anybody could do, because nobody was really prepared with, you know, what do you do with all this food? What do you do with, you know, like, we were ready to be open, you know? So when we closed the day before St. Patrick's Day, when the city said it's time to close, that was tough. But like I said, we just tried to keep our heads and, you know, kind of just get through it with our staff. Well, and it worked.
You
it
did
tough.
Get through it. Has the business, has the food service business been permanently changed by COVID, or are things back to sort of the pre-COVID normal now?
Well, it's kind of weird, because what happened then is we have a location in the city, we have a location in the county, and we have a location in St. Charles County. And I'm telling you what, they were like different animals. The way the city treated it, the way the county was kind of in the middle, and St. Charles was kind of more hands off, like, you know, wear a mask, don't wear a mask, go out, whatever. So we were navigating how to tell, you know, one company, but different locations, what they should and shouldn't do. So we kind of figured that out pretty quick. But now people are back. The sales are great. You know, the demand is out there. And I think a lot of restaurants are seeing that folks are, you know, really happy to be back out. We're doing tons of Christmas parties and stuff that was put on hold this year. We've really picked up. The one caveat is you'll hear this and you've heard it from other folks, is staff, is our labor has been very tight, and it's hard to find, you know, good people or enough people. So we're okay, but we're not great. And I think that's kind of the, as I talk to my other restaurateurs, they're saying the same thing. Like, we're getting by, but boy, it'd sure be great to have another 5 or 10 people. And so it is strained a little bit that way, but from the customer side, they're out, they're happy, they're coming in, and that's the good news. So.
Well, it is, it's remarkable, and here's this buddy of mine, and he's done so well in the restaurant business. Last question, Scotty, before I let you go.
Sure.
You mentioned the difference. You've got a facility in the city of St. Louis, a facility in St. Louis County, and a facility in St. Charles. St. Charles never had a shutdown of any kind.
Right.
And
right.
How noticeable, I mean, did your business boom when all the St. Louis restaurants were shut down, or did it kind of maintain its normal rate?
Yeah, the interesting thing about, the city, Soulard, got closed, and it really suffered for a while, and then it opened back up. But St. Charles was kind of a crazy phenomenon. We had an influx of Illinois folks that were shut down, and, you know, they heard that St. Charles was rolling. So if they wanted to go out or were comfortable going out, we laughed one day, the whole parking lot was full of Illinois plates. So people migrated on their comfort level to places that they thought, you know, they could go out and eat or have a beer or whatever they wanted to do. So it was an interesting study of migration, if you will. And Webster was kind of in the middle of all that. We were kind of closed, masked, you know, we did everything we were supposed to do, follow the rules, but folks a little quicker than the city kind of started coming back out. So it was kind of a, you know, three different scales of business there.
Well, his book will be coming out soon, How a Restaurant Survived the Pandemic of 2020. Scott Kimfer is our guest. He owns Llewellyn's. Check him out. It's a great place to eat. They do a fine, fine job. Scotty, thanks so much for your time.
Yep, and go USA, baby.
Here we go. Yeah, that's tomorrow. USA playing the Netherlands.
We have come to the Webster location, 9 o'clock. We got breakfast food and drinks and everything. So come on out.
Can't beat it. All right, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about that USA team, the soccer match that's coming up tomorrow. You know how much I love soccer. That's next on KMOX.
Live and local, this is St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Well, this just in to the KMOX newsroom.
What's that?
The flu bug has infected the Netherlands soccer team.
Has it?
Yes.
Where'd you hear this?
James over here.
Really? Wait, you're wearing an orange shirt. Are you a Netherlands supporter?
He is not. But they, so apparently a number of their players are exhibiting symptoms of influenza there in Qatar.
Oh, that's not good.
Or is it Qatar?
Qatar.
There's a Qatar.
I think you could call it either. What do you call it?
I call it Qatar. I've been calling it Qatar for years. And then all of a sudden during the Gulf War, it became Qatar all of a sudden. And then and I don't understand how that works. Now, we're at the stage now. I guess we're in the last 16.
Yeah, so this is the knockout round. So what happens now is
you're done.
Yeah, we play till we have a winner. If you have a winner, no ties, and they'll even go to penalty kicks.
Huh?
We'll talk to Bill McDermott in the next hour, but I do believe what happens, I think they play 15 minutes of overtime twice back and forth, and then they'll go to penalty kicks if that's the case.
Well, that's a great thing about soccer, of course, is you never know when the game's over because, you know, it's 90 minutes, but it's not really 90 minutes because then they throw the extra time on. It's the only sport where the clock goes forward and not backward. You know, you think about it, you know, you run down to zero. That's how most things work in sports. Not in soccer. No.
American sport.
You're counting up, and then in 90 minutes hits, and they're still playing because the...
Well, there's what they call over, you know, the extra time. Yeah, because, you know, some of those guys like to do a little acting out there, fall down.
I'm fine with the extra
stretch
time.
Stretch out.
I just want to know how much time is left. That's
the
thing.
Tell you. They tell you 7 minutes of extra time.
Well, yeah, but you can't. But the
But if somebody is a goofball and goofs around for a minute or so because trying to throw the ball in,
even
the referee
in extra time,
holds them accountable.
You can add extra time in extra time. Is that right?
That's
how that works.
Now, will you be watching tomorrow?
Yeah, I'm a very big fan, and so the
that doesn't seem too realistic.
Our great USA player that scored the goal the other day, old. Petra
Pulisic.
Yeah, right. He's back with the ball club.
Yeah, he took a little injury there to his waist.
Ran into the goalie.
The goalie scoring. He scored. That was an awesome game.
Apparently, he got hurt in the Netherlands. They said
no, he didn't.
He
came out yesterday and said no, the Netherlands did not get hurt. Now we are playing the Netherlands.
We are, and of course, you got to look out for their star player Van Sumpingen, whatever.
They're a good team. They're one of the top five, six teams.
You got the those Dutch names are all. You got the Van der Sloot guy. And
are you going to pick on the Dutch now?
No, because if you're not Dutch, you ain't much. But these guys, they're some of the finest players in the world there in the Netherlands. What do they have in the Netherlands? What are they? Are they famous for anything? I guess the little wooden shoes.
Great weather.
Uh huh.
Amsterdam.
Yeah,
that's a great place.
Yeah.
They have tulips.
Have they?
Yeah, tulips.
Haven't
you ever seen the visuals of the tulip fields of the Netherlands?
Can't say that I've had the pleasure.
And
the
windmills that are everywhere.
And they're the ones with the wooden shoes, aren't they?
The Dutch are the ones who've mastered regulation of water, not regulation government-wise, but regulation physically-wise, being able to, make canals to avoid floods, etc. They've been living on the water for their whole lives.
Well, that's impressive. And, of course, they no longer use the wooden shoes in the soccer team.
Yeah, I don't know much about the wooden shoes. You'll have to educate me as it relates to wooden shoes. Who wears wooden shoes?
Well, the Dutch out there.
I don't think the Dutch ever wore them. Debbie's Dutch. I don't ever see her stumbling around in wooden shoes.
Well, that was back in the day. I mean, I think they've kind of gotten into the leather now, but... that's neither here nor there.
Will you be watching?
Oh yeah,
where
mean, the passion of it all. I might go to Llewellyn's and watch the.
Yeah, are you gonna wake up Georgianne there and say, "Sweetheart, let's go downstairs"?
Because it comes on at like 9 o'clock, right?
Yeah, it's 9 o'clock tomorrow.
What time is that in Qatar?
It'll be in the evening. What is
afternoon?
Like 7, 8 in the evening?
Oh, is it that? Okay,
I think so.
Well, because we played the last game at 1 o'clock, so
it was like 10 o'clock at night.
It
there
was that late.
Yeah,
interesting.
So, but now that the knockout matches, you win, you move on, you lose, you go home.
And if you win, so if there's 16 teams left, let me do a little math here.
Oh, Lord, 16, here we go. Carry the one, minus three.
You got the winner, it leaves 18. So that's four game. That means it's the quarterfinals next.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Yeah.
So we're already into the quarterfinals.
It's happening, brother. It's happening.
And, of course, as we know, from the quarterfinals, you then go to the semifinals.
Totally.
Where there's only four teams left.
Right.
The two games. And then you win that sucker.
And you move on.
You're into the finals.
Hey, now.
We are three games away from being
in
the finals of the World Cup.
I don't know. Are we three games or four games? Let's make sure you're
Well, we
got to
beat the Netherlands, but they're all sick with the flu out there.
I had not heard this. Is that in the news somewhere?
James O'Sullivan. He's a very reliable source working the board over
clearly.
There. Yeah, he tells me that there's like four of them, right, James? They got to have the flu, something like that? Several of them, it said. So, yeah.
Yeah, there's four games left to get to. You'll play four games if you make it to the final. Yeah. You're right. Yeah.
Thank you.
And you could wind up playing in the second and third place game. Or the third and fourth place game.
Now, what's the point of that?
Well, it's a world competition. What do you mean, what's the point of it? Are you one of those guys who thinks that a guy gets a bronze medal in the Olympics? He's, what's the point of that? You get a bronze medal.
Exactly.
Really?
Yeah.
You only support gold medals.
Yeah. I mean, who wants to? Look, you win, you lose.
But if Tula.
If you're walking around with a bronze thing around your neck, it tells me you lost.
Oh, Lord.
It's what it tells you. And, I mean, no, there shouldn't be any rewards.
I think you're wrong about this. We should bring this up with Amy.
Well, that's coming up right around the corner. That's Michael Kelly. He's sitting in for Chris Ranji today on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Kind enough to join me for a few segments on Hancock and Kelly, show that's named after him. And, right around the corner is the show. Stick around. The news is next on The Voice of St. Louis. Thanks to James O'Sullivan on the board. See you around the corner.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.